My guest at this time is Jill Stanek. She's a retired nurse who famously confronted then-Illinois State Senator Barack Obama over his opposition to legislation that would have required every effort to save the life of babies who survive abortions. She is now a blogger and pro-life activist and was one of the leaders of a sit-in earlier this year at the office of House Speaker John Boehner, demanding a House vote on the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. On Wednesday, that vote took place and the bill passed the House of Representatives. It now heads to the U.S. Senate for consideration. And Jill was in the gallery for that House vote. And Jill, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
Well, this vote was originally scheduled for January. And of course, that's one of the reasons why you demanded a vote on this that eventually happened on Wednesday. How pleased are you with the fact that the vote did happen and with the result?
I was very pleased that the vote happened, and also that the language of the bill ended up surprisingly to be much stronger than the original bill that would have been presented on January 22nd. And as it turns out, all of the warring factions, so to speak, in the pro-life movement ended up with putting language in this bill that makes it pretty solid as far as not giving the abortionist really any room to even commit 20-week and beyond abortions, even if there is somewhat of a rape-incest exception.
And so describe some of the language changes. What makes this so much tougher?
We had factions that went from one end of wanting no rape-incest exception at all to the other end of not wanting the reporting requirement in with the rape-incest exception, meaning that if you went to an abortionist for an abortion and said that you'd been raped, you had to have reported this to the police. And there were people that didn't want that in there at all. So what they ended up with was that minors have to report rape incest to the police, which makes total sense because, you know, if you're a minor and you're, you know, involved in incest or you've been raped, you know, there's a great chance that you could be raped again if the perpetrator isn't caught. And so for your own protection, you should have this reported to police and receive social services help. So there's that still intact in the bill. And then as far as adult women are concerned, they are only allowed to get abortions for rape. Incest has been taken out as an exception for adult women, because if you're an adult and you're engaging in consensual incest sex, then you shouldn't have an exception for abortions. And if you've been raped and the victim of incest when you're an adult, well, then it would be rape. It would be considered rape, no matter if it was a family member or not. And in that event, the current bill says that the woman has to have gotten some sort of counseling or medical treatment within 48 hours before she gets her abortion. But in the meantime, there have been other stipulations added to the bill that, as I said, made it, I think, so unpalatable for abortionists that I just don't see that when this bill ends up being signed into law that abortions will be committed at all past 20 weeks.
Jill, how big of a difference do you think your sit-in made? Leadership will obviously say we were for this all along. We just needed to iron out some differences. You obviously tried to push them to get this to the floor when it seemed like it wasn't going to happen right away. So how much of a difference do you think you made here?
Those who heard the floor debate yesterday and heard Speaker Boehner heard him say that he wanted to basically give a shout out to not only the representatives who were involved in crafting the bill, but he also said to those Americans who made their voices heard, who stood up for this bill, want you to know we've heard you. And of course, I know that people emailed and called to their legislators and to Speaker Boehner, but I also think that he was acknowledging our protest, both of our protests. And even yesterday, I heard from people who are insiders on the Hill, once again, that our protests made a big difference. And the way it was explained to me is that the Hill operates in crisis mode, basically putting out one fire to the next. And after the Pain-Capable bill, wasn't called for a vote in early January. It was kind of put to the side and languished and wasn't given the attention because it wasn't urgent anymore. Well, our protests on March 25th, I'm told, by where we had to sit in, and eight of us were arrested, I'm told by several people, moved the pain-capable bill back up to the front burner. It was once again considered an urgent matter. And then our follow-up protests with 14 pro-life activist groups on May 7th let legislators know that we were not going to go away until this bill was heard. And so I do not think it was any coincidence that they announced the day after our second protest on May 8th that they were going to be holding a vote the following week.
Jill, obviously the bill now heads to the Senate, Republican leadership there, which is, I'm sure, fairly receptive to the bill as well. But at the same time, they're going to need 60 votes to advance it. So what's your prospects for getting this through the Senate?
Well, like you said, need 60 votes in order to break a filibuster that, of course, Democrats are going to pull. I don't know how it's going to fare, but I do know that Lindsey Graham, who is a lead sponsor in the Senate, for all of the concerns I have for him as a conservative in other areas, I know without a doubt that he is very articulate on a pro-life issue. And I've heard him speak very forcefully and convincingly on this particular bill, the pain-capable bill. And he even said in January at a Family Research Council event that he was chomping at the bit to debate this bill. He wants to bring it to the American people. And so even if the bill can't pass, and we know that unless President Obama has a major conversion, he wouldn't sign it anyway, I am hopeful that the bill will continue to percolate at the forefront of conversation with the American public and continue to educate the American public about how advanced abortions are in the United States to the point where, at this point, women can get abortions all the way through 9 months of pregnancy, which so many people don't even know. And also, you know, alerting the American people that by the age of 20 weeks, we know that these babies feel pain. And, you know, humanize these babies to the American people, too, who otherwise just wouldn't even be thinking about them. So even if the bill doesn't pass to the Senate, I am pretty sure that it's going to be used as a good vehicle to educate the public, get Democrats on record, and anti-lifers who might be Republican on record for opposing the bill, and do all sorts of good, even if it doesn't make it to the president's desk.
Jill, that really is a major dividing line in this debate right now, it seems. While Americans are still quite a bit split on the overall question of abortion, it appears that when it comes to late-term abortions, the numbers are getting more and more lopsided in your favor. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, there have been several polls taken by conservative and mainstream news organizations and even Huffington Post that show that across all demographics, the majority of Americans, usually at least 60%, think that abortions beyond 20 weeks, late-term abortions, shouldn't be allowed. They should be banned. And we're talking men, women, young, old, millennials, across the board, people think that this is heinous. And so it's definitely a losing proposition for Democrats and Hillary Clinton, for instance, to come out as she did yesterday in a tweet opposed to this bill. It definitely sets them apart from the mainstream and makes them look like the extremists that they are. And so many times Republicans are cast as extremists by the mainstream media. And this is an opportunity to show, you know, Democrats pro-aborts in the true light that they are the ones who are extremists, not us.
Jill, how soon do you want and expect a Senate vote on this? And how much pressure will you be putting on them to bring it to the floor?
You know what, Greg? I haven't even thought of that. You know, we did just have one phone call this morning starting to talk about it. But this is all still so fresh, you know, having just passed the House yesterday. And wanting to give the Senate time, you know, having, you know, trying to move forward in faith and seeing, you know, what Leader McConnell says, what Lindsey Graham says. So there haven't been any plans formulated yet, except for if this doesn't move forward in a timely manner, we will be back. We do know that. And we also plan to begin making a big deal out of Hillary Clinton's opposition to the 20-week ban.
We'll be watching. Jill, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Jill Stanek is a retired nurse. She's now a blogger and pro-life activist and was one of the lead organizers of two different sit-ins at the Congressional Office of House Speaker John Boehner demanding a vote on the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.